Hello, my name is Mike Goldman, and welcome to On The Mic. I feel rude having my sunglasses on, but I'll just take them off at the start and then put them back on so you can see that I'm not actually drunk and wasted partying in LA with some dude on a rooftop. Now, I'm here with international businessman, man of mystery, Nicholas Stone from Bluestone Lane Coffee. This guy is an absolute legend. He played AFL in Melbourne and came over here to the States working in New York for ANZ and then realised the coffee was shit, like most Australians do. When he first got here, and then all of a sudden he's decided to open his own coffee house. He's got so many amazing stories, and here's our guest today on the mic, Nicholas Stone. Welcome
Mike,
to the show.
Thank you.
That's Mr. Bluestone Lane.
What an auspicious introduction.
well, thank you. They're always auspicious. Look at this tasty food. We're actually in Santa Monica. No, we're in Santa Monica.
Santa Monica.
And I was in Venice before. I was going to say Venice, but yep. it's a tough coffee area to enter. There's some amazing coffee houses
there
around
is.
Here. I mean, you started out in New York where the coffee was crap, but but now they've sort of followed you, and everyone else is trying to catch up with your game. But here's it wouldn't be an easy game for you.
Yeah, definitely more sort of competition, but still tremendous opportunity. And we're actually opening our first location in Venice, our first cafe, and we're going to serve breakfast through dinner, which Ooh. We've never done before. So we're working on that. We're 2 weeks away on Rose Avenue. So, it's pretty exciting.
Man, it's such a cool look that you've got down there in your Bluestone Lane coffee house. So look at this incredible avocado smash with prosciutto. That's the best avocado smash I've ever seen. Is this from the back streets of Melbourne where you got this idea? I'm going to have a bite of it while you tell me about it.
Yeah, well, pretty much. So,
whoa.
Knowing my background, it's pretty slippery, that thing. It's they call it the lot for a reason. There's a lot of topping on it.
Everything on it.
Yeah. But essentially, I wanted to bring the Australian sort of coffee culture to the US and scale it. I'd never worked a day in hospitality or retail in my entire life. I knew nothing about the industry other than I was a customer. And I thought there must be more people like me that are interested in a more premium experience. So where it's just not about the quality of product, but very much about the service and the aesthetic and feeling like it's your local and that you have that element of escape where you can... you've had a terrible, a tough morning or a tough night, baby screaming. You can go in your local and they recognize your face, you name your order. And I think that's the quintessential property of the Australian coffee culture, that it's very much about that local community and the ability for that proprietor and that team to make you feel different. And that's what we're trying to do here.
I couldn't believe when I got to America for the first time how bad the coffee was and that Starbucks, sorry, pardon me, and couldn't find a decent coffee. What is it with Americans loving the syrup coffee?
Yeah, I think what's happened is through Starbucks' sort of commercial success, they were the ones who introduced it and everyone's hooked on the sugar. But
yeah, that's what it is.
Slowly, the younger generation, the millennials who have known about Starbucks since being introduced by their parents or at school are now looking for a more premium experience and more healthy food offerings, a more pure artisan type of flavour. Mm. And that's consistent with what we provide in Australia.
It's so bloody good coffee, and the prosciutto is amazing. It's usually when you go to a coffee shop and you ask for prosciutto on with avocado on toast, you don't get prosciutto that tastes that good.
Yeah,
or prosciutto. How do you pronounce it?
Prosciutto. Spot on.
So, Australian way to say it.
Yeah, that's all right. We're unashamedly Australian.
How many of these stores have you got now?
We're just about to open our 30th store.
Wow.
So. Well done. Yeah, we've been very, very lucky. We've got a great team, and we have an incredible amount of locals who come every day. And
speaking of locals, you've got a couple of Aussie people working for you as well. And is that a secret to the business? Whenever Australians come to LA, New York, or wherever Bluestone Lane are, the Aussies rock up and get a decent coffee?
Yeah, I think very much so. We're unashamedly Australian. We're trying to model everything on the Australian coffee experience. And what we find, and particularly now with a bit more sort of scale and size, that a lot of the best Australian hospitality sort of small business owners and entrepreneurs want to join us. And we think that's absolutely amazing because there's so much opportunity.
Does it franchise?
No, it's all company owned.
Join us just to work with you.
Yeah,
To lead. Sorry, I told you about my mouthful.
Yeah, lead part of the business and, You know, the States has got 330 million people. So that just the opportunity is just on a magnitude that's hard to even fathom in Australia.
I was reading somewhere that in New York, 75% of the hospitality businesses fail in the first 5 years. Was that something that freaked you out? Did you have any moments where you thought, oh, this could go pear-shaped?
Without a doubt. And probably most days, I do think.
Really? When you're opening, like you're about to do a restaurant. You're about to do dinner as well.
Yeah, I think you've got to have that element of paranoia. It keeps you on your toes. It's a bit like, you know, a sporting team. On any day, you can lose a footy game, right? Yeah.
And like Collingwood.
Yeah.
Is that your team?
I actually go for Melbourne. Like, I played for three AFL teams. Very much a journeyman.
Let me see if I can remember. Is that Collingwood?
Yeah.
The Piran Dragons?
I think that's probably the most successful team of all of them I played with, that's for sure. And wasn't an AFL club. But yeah, Collingwood, Hawthorn, and St Kilda.
Which one did you like the best? Which was the most fun?
Well, I played the most AFL games at Hawthorn, so I think I enjoyed that a lot. But then,
is that where you know Shura Tapp from?
I know Shura from school, from Wesley.
He's the announcer at the Hawthorn Hawks game. I didn't know that you actually went to school with him.
Yeah, I was a year above him at Wesley. We played school footy for a number of years, and then when I played AFL for six seasons, I came back to our old schoolboys team, Collegians, and I played with Shura, and Shura was the best player in that competition. It was amazing because he was doing Warner Brothers like kids show in the morning, and then rock up to the game 5 minutes before, and then no warm up, rolling the second half of the first quarter.
He used to host the Mole in Australia as well, and I worked with him at the Commonwealth Games. But Facebook and Channel 7 were interviewing the athletes after the games. But we had some big nights there, I tell you.
Yeah, he's a great...
He's a sporting encyclopedia, that guy.
Yeah, he loves sports. Loves golf. Golf's his big passion now. But and other than the Hawks. But yeah, he's just always been into acting, performing, TV. And he stayed with us a couple of times in New York and crashed on the cast like good Australian mates do. And great guy, and he's doing really well. So
you started out in New York, now you're here. Yeah. What do you prefer, New York or LA? Why have you moved here? Just to oversee things? Do you think you go back to New York?
No, I think we're here now, LA, permanently. We've just had a little girl, our first child, my wife, Alexandra, and I.
A supermodel? Apparently you're married to a supermodel.
I would say I'm batting well above my average.
Aren't we all?
Yeah, I think
it
must have been
New York supermodel or Australian girl? Or?
So Australian girl from Melbourne, modeled based in New York. And
you met in New York?
Paris. No, we met in Melbourne, actually. We met at Derby Day, like the true courting festival.
So when you were wasted.
Year. I would say I was inebriated. I was having a good time on Derby Day and we met then we caught up down the beach a few months later and the courtship sort of was brief, and then we've been going out been together for over 10 years now.
That's cool, man.
I'm very surprised she stuck it out with me. I was, especially when I was juggling two jobs, because Bluestone actually launched its first store in late July 2013. So we're coming up to our fifth year anniversary.
Yeah, wow.
And for the first 3 years, I was still working full time in banking and doing this on the side. So I jumped at 12 stores. So I wasn't a particularly focused individual.
Well, you're working for ANZ. You wouldn't want to be working for the banks now. They're all getting busted for being banking cartels and ripping off customers and doing all this dodgy stuff.
Yeah, not a great period in sort of the Australian banking history, but when I loved my time at ANZ. I had a great opportunity. I was rebuilding the corporate finance function in New York and London in 2011.
Wow,
I had great bosses, but then none of those guys are in banking industry anymore.
They're going to jail now.
Yeah.
Everybody's leaving.
That's right. So that's the real reason behind Bluestone Lane. That, it's a cover.
I got to get out of here. Yeah. These guys are doing some dodgy stuff.
Yeah.
So New York must have been so much fun and starting a business there and, you know, taking on the other coffee houses and actually becoming a success has been such an incredible ride for you. And now with 30 coffee houses... That's crazy. Where does all this coffee come from? And you must be quite particular with where you get it from and how you make it and who the baristas are, because a lot goes into it, doesn't it?
Yeah, well, more than I realized, absolutely, because, you know, I still can't make good coffee, you know. Well, you got to bring in the guys that know how to we do it. It's in their DNA. Exactly. No, no. I'm fine with it being honest about it.
But you have to study it.
It
to make a decent coffee.
Yeah, I think there's definitely technique. There's sort of key elements is without that, like your technical training, the equipment, the bean, and the milk. And Jai Lott, who heads up all of our coffee and tea, he's actually a surfer from Noosa married an American.
Yeah.
And I met him in New York after a couple of stores. And So this guy could run the whole thing. And he
does.
He used to literally sell coffee in the morning and surf every day. And now the guy runs the whole business. But we roast all our coffee in Dumbo, Brooklyn. We built a big roastery there.
Oh, wow. Cool.
And
is it coffee from... Arabica, is it?
Yeah.
Arabica beans. Arabica
beans. Yeah. So no Robusta.
Have you ever had Lawak coffee from a cat's ass?
No.
Have you heard about that?
Is this like the thing that like monkeys, you know?
No. So there's this little sort of pussycat looking animal in Indonesia called the Lawak. And in the Balinese sort of area when it was a Dutch colony, they used to buy all the expensive, the best coffee beans.
Yeah.
But then they realized that all the townspeople who were working for them were drinking this amazing coffee. And they're like, where do you get this from? And what was happening is this Lawak, this cat, was going out into the coffee fields and eating the coffee and pooping it out.
The old excrement,
And because it was fermented through the cat's stomach, apparently it tastes better. And they sell it as a more expensive coffee now.
We need to do that.
You need cat's bum coffee. You heard it here first.
We need to pivot and do that. Okay, so... We're not sourcing that at the moment. No.
You don't have Lawaks, mate. What do you have a lot of in LA? Homeless people?
Well, there's definitely opportunity there.
You wouldn't want to be getting... Oh, no. It is a problem in LA, the homeless people. I shouldn't joke about it because I did live here for a couple of years. And I noticed just down the road in Venice, they're setting up a big fundraiser tonight to help the homeless people. It's pretty prevalent around here and in New York.
Definitely in Venice.
Is it a mental health problem as well as a homeless
thing? Without a doubt. I think that the social sort of security system is nowhere near as robust as what we have in Australia and certainly like... I feel incredibly sad a lot of the time because, it's a lot of these people that they're from institutionalized sort of poverty and hardship, and then some definitely are showing, symptoms of mental, ill health. Mm. But, it is the land of opportunity, and that's the thing with Bluestone. Like, our biggest challenge in growing is people, and we're constantly trying to recruit people and provide tremendous growth opportunities. You could join Bluestone as, as a dishwasher and be running the store within 9 months.
Well, that's actually what I'm here for. This is just a secret way to get an audition to work in Bluestone. I'd like to be a barista.
Yeah.
Or I'll start washing the dishes. But that's cool that you're hiring the Aussies, but you're also helping people get the right people to work in your coffee house. Is it hard to find staff?
Yeah, and to be honest, like the way that we run our employee proposition is much more aligned to Australia rather than the US. So when I moved across, there was this minimum wage, which was below levels that I could remember how much I was being paid in my chemist round when I was like 10 years of age. And there was no paid leave. So we instituted things like that. We have paid leave. We have salaries. We have, we premium paying. We have health insurance.
That's cool.
We do everything that we can because our staff are everything. Like
Bluestone, and they're going to promote you as well. They'll tell all their friends and family to come in and buy you really good coffee.
Bluestone Lane is just a human connection business. It's only about people. Like coffee, everyone will be able to make good coffee soon enough. Everyone will catch on to it. It's about the human connection that makes it special. And I think that's very much what the Australian coffee culture is. Yeah. You look forward to seeing that guy who knows your name, your
face,
your order.
The tattoos and the beard. If he doesn't have that and a cool hat, you know that he's not going to make a good coffee. Like the dude downstairs, he plays in a band. He's got some groovy earrings. I'll know how to make my coffee. What's it like living and working in Donald Trump's America?
Wow, it has been certainly polarizing, I'd say that. But listen, he's not everyone's cup of tea and, he's not really mine. But, it's very strange because the whole U.S. political system was just, like, fascinating. Yeah. He's very much like... what's the Kevin Spacey show? We can't even mention his
House
name either. House of Cards. I think it very much is. And, I'm just hoping that sanity prevails. Mm. And,
because what's going on the border now? I mean, there's obviously different sides to the story. All these people illegal immigrants coming across the Mexican border, and they're being separated from their children. I mean, some people say, oh, you know, they broke the law, but you know, you got a morality issue really because you're there because you're taking kids away from their parents. And then, I mean, that's what
it's
it comes
heartbreaking.
Down to.
But I just saw a flash update that I think he's conceded that due to sanity has prevailed on this one, and public opinion that no longer children are going to be separated from their families over the border.
Isn't it crazy though that he's gone and had a meeting or a love affair with Kim Jong Un?
Yeah, talk about we were talking about. I was having this discussion with a friend a couple of days ago about like brand management and how well this guy's played it. Like, think about it, only 6 months ago, 12 months, everyone was so worried that he was just going to destroy the free
world.
Yeah,
and they were talking nukes,
and now he's like. He's on Vogue. He'll be on the front cover of Vogue soon.
Well, they're talking about he'll get a Nobel Peace Prize if they denuclearize.
He's played this system beautifully. So I hope the end game's a positive one, or it's not just going to end up like what was the thing the guys from South Park did, and they had the puppets, and it was
Nick Kilkenny.
And
I Team America. Weeks,
Team America. Yeah, and it was his father, right? No more WMD. So I just. Like the whole nuclear thing, I think it really got a lot of attention in the press in the US over the last 2 years. And I'm just hoping that, that everyone's sort of... the world's in a bit of a challenged position right now.
Totally.
We need to sort out a lot of areas that are in more sort of military-sensitive areas, politically, and even just some of the trade stuff. I don't think... I know there's the biggest movement we've ever seen against globalization, but, again, I hope that the powers that be come to their senses and we all realize we've got one planet and we have to sort of get along.
Well, something I find interesting, just talking to people today, I only flew into LA today, they don't want Trump to succeed. They're like, he's their president, but they don't care. Like, they'd rather him fail at, you know, denuclearizing North Korea because they don't want him to be successful because they just hate him so much here.
Well, very much. California's like staunch Democrat state, like New York. So, it's obviously he has an active supporter base, but I do think he's divided a lot of the country. So hopefully the people around him can direct him in the right way. And, you know, it's going to be really interesting. I think that no one's emerged on the Democrat side to be the rightful sort of heir to Obama's legacy. But there's a lot of discussion about, obviously, Michelle Obama. There's a lot of discussion about Howard Schultz, who was the CEO and chairman of Starbucks, who stepped down from Starbucks 2 weeks ago for the first time after, you know, 40 years, he has no active role with the company anymore.
So maybe he'll run.
Yeah, that's all the rumors.
Do you think we'll see another actor or someone? Like, I think one of the Baldwins was saying, is it, who's the one that impersonates? Alec Baldwin. Yeah. He said the other night that he would run.
I
wonder if he'd run in character as Donald Trump. And everyone voted to him. That would just be so messed
that
up.
I think Alec's got a few skeletons in the cupboard. Donald had a few, but it clearly hasn't impacted
Stormy Daniels.
His ability.
She got paid off, but she's still traveling around using it for promo.
Yeah, apparently.
That's if you're a politician, you've got... Or on reality TV, which is the same kind of thing. If you got skeletons in the cupboard, they're going to find them.
Yeah,
they're going to come out. They're going to say things about you that are true, not true.
Yeah.
The Russians are going to be trying to either get you voted off or voted on.
Yep, that's true. I think when you're playing with a Hollywood star, they've probably, you know, bent a few rules, tried a few tricks to make it to the top, and normally they leave a few little crumbs where the mice can feed off and generate a story.
Do you think you'll get voted back in?
I don't think so, but again, I wouldn't be surprised because I didn't think he'd be voted in the first place. The college. Electorate system is very unusual. Electoral system is very unusual. The fact that Hillary won the majority vote but wasn't elected. It's very different from the way it works in Australia.
And then they say, oh no, it's just if you take out California, then Donald Trump had more votes. And it is very confusing, isn't it?
Well, it's funny that you take out like the most popular state that's Democrat, and guess what? Yeah, you win the majority vote. It's like, okay, we'll take out Texas.
Super delegates.
Yeah.
Like where one person has more votes when they're voting for someone to run for them.
Yeah.
Like poor old Bernie Sanders, he was ahead on points, and then all of a sudden Hillary pulled some sort of trick to be able to get herself to run. I mean, that Hillary's still sort of acting like she thinks she might run again. I mean,
I think she's a bit bitter. That's what's
so
happened.
Embarrassing for her to get beaten by someone like Donald Trump. She should just pipe down and let someone else step forward and have a go.
Yeah, I think that's what's going to happen. I think it was clearly that not enough females in particular voted for Hillary, and that played a big role in the result. Mm. But yeah, Bernie had a lot of momentum there, and particularly in New York and Vermont, and obviously that northeastern area. But I think the next Democratic Party leader will be someone new. I think they need to bring in someone who's going to come with a tremendous amount of momentum and popularity.
Maybe Robert De Niro. He'll come into his speech. Fuck Trump.
Yeah, well,
did you see him the other day at the Tony Awards, was it, or something?
Yeah, Tony, and then he did it in Canada. But I saw he's opening the new Nobu there, we're apologising to the, you know, Canada and their citizens. So.
This is someone who was best mates with the Weinsteins and used to have such an incredible career. Now he's doing Dirty Grandpa. He's the same age as Donald Trump. Maybe he's just pissed off that Donald Trump is the leader of the free world and he looks like a homeless guy off the street saying, fuck Trump. I mean, anyone who, you know, is from middle America that likes Trump, that was sort of like on the edge, maybe I'll vote the other way, surely the Hollywood elite know that they have to have a better argument than just getting up and saying, fuck Trump.
Yeah,
they need to be a bit more clever a bit more creative. I mean,
it seems like just a bit sort of like blatant, crude headlines capture people's attention. Mm. That's what's a bit sad, I think, about social media. I thought one of the most fascinating things I've read for the last couple of weeks was Tim Cook's interview about the new iPhone that's going to have the software that'll tell you how much screen time,
that
and how many
so
times
good.
You picked it
it's
up.
It's so well needed.
Oh, it's and the fact that Apple, which is clearly incentivized for everyone to keep their phone in their hand, in fact, tape it on, glue it to your hand, has said that I'm surprised how much time I'm spending on my iPhone. Mm. My iPhone wasn't designed for this. This notifications thing has gone bananas. We have to pare it back.
Your notification thing is a joke. Like, if you don't go through and turn off notifications for the majority of the apps you got, you get the worst anxiety attacks because you get a notification every 10 seconds.
Yeah, well, and you've got the vibration on. It's awfully sort of strange, right?
So annoying. Yeah, that was a big eye-opener, and it was nice to see Apple, you know,
get on the front foot and some leadership. Yeah. I think Tim Cook is a phenomenal leader. Obviously, everyone talks about the legacy of Steve Jobs, but I think the way that Tim Cook has handled that succession with such sort of his own style, but with so much strength and poise and respect,
are you trying to open a Bluestone Lane in the Apple headquarters here in California?
Yes. Cupertino.
You probably could, couldn't you? They're probably going to a Burger King in there and a Starbucks. They need a Bluestone Lane.
Yeah, they probably do have a Starbucks. Yeah. So, Tim, if you're listening, I want to be in your big building.
But it'll be free. They pay for it. It'll be free.
I'd assume
like Google
that,
as well.
I'd assume that Apple that has, I don't know, like nearly $1 trillion of cash, that they could probably afford a few flat whites.
Have you been to Google headquarters?
No, I haven't actually, but I've been to Apple headquarters. Oh, I've been to Facebook, HP, because in my banking life, I banked at a lot of those companies. So I used to go to the Bay Area sort of every couple of months.
I just went down there for a drive because I was going to meet a friend of mine who worked at Facebook and have a coffee, and he didn't give me the tour, unfortunately, which would have been really fun. So I thought, I really want to see Google. So I thought I'll just do a drive-by and have a look at the Google headquarters. And I parked the car and went, hang on a minute, this is the actual Google headquarters car park. So I just walked in and there were all these food vans and all these Google employees getting free food. So I queued up, I got a free taco.
Then I
followed a couple of Google guys into the offices, and they had a slippery slide coming down from the second floor into like a kid's playroom.
What?
And yeah, and they had like all these ping pong tables and stuff like that. I literally only walked in for about a minute because I'm thinking I'm going to get arrested and someone's going to crash tackle me to the ground at any second because they'd have face recognition technology everywhere.
Yeah.
but it was I couldn't believe how easy it was just to walk in, walk around and have a look and
very trusting.
Pretend that I worked.
Maybe you're just like a master at, you know, deception and finding ways to penetrate high security buildings. That's a career.
I shouldn't be talking about that kind of thing because I'm about to go through Russia driving in the Mongol rally.
Yeah. Well, they'll probably respect that type of behavior.
Yeah, they would.
They'd
enjoy it.
Yeah.
Do you reckon that the Russians hacked Hillary Clinton's emails and helped Donald Trump get in?
I think they definitely played a part
yeah.
in the election. That's undoubted. I think both sides have admitted that that's what's happened.
That's what America's done that for years, meddling in other people's elections and trying to put people in power.
Yeah, well, you know, so they say.
So they say.
I've got to be very careful here.
He doesn't want his visa taken away.
No, I don't.
The CIA could be listening.
No, I think that that's one of the biggest problems, right, that we've got. Like, social media has some big externalities, and one of them is people are literally believing anything that flashes on their computer screen, their iPhone, their iPad, their smartphone device. And if it says that, you know, this person said this about this particular person in a racist way, or if it was discrimination, people, the first thing they do is they assume that it's fact. It's like it's an encyclopedia. It was like it was produced you know, by an independent news source.
You got to do your own research, because there's so many news sources out there that are pumping out crap that's not true, whether it's CNN or some little guy on his laptop that's putting something out there. That a lot of times I feel like they're either exaggerating the truth, you know, or making stuff up just to get the hits, because they're all desperate. I mean, these big news services used to be, you know, the owners.
Truly independent.
They used to be the owners of the keys to the world, that everyone would get their news off them, and now they're not. So I feel like they exaggerate things a little bit. Look at us getting political. We came here to talk about coffee.
Yeah, I thought that was right, Mike. Now, you know, now you're putting my visa at risk. You're probably putting my business at risk.
I'm probably
going to get a red dot in my head any second, you know.
Now, leave the Indians out of this. Dude, come on. California, you've got to be careful.
No.
Right, we're out of that.
that is not good.
So tell me, you're here in L.A., Your coffee houses are going brilliant. You've got 30 of them all over America, not just LA and New York.
Six cities.
Where
six
else cities. Are they?
Yeah, so New York, New Jersey, Philadelphia, Washington, D.C., San Francisco, and L.A. Yeah, and we're going within the next 12 months, we'll be in Austin, Texas, Houston, Dallas, Boston, and we're looking at Miami, Nashville, and Seattle. I think we've got to go to Seattle.
Yeah,
the
totally.
The home of Starbucks and open
oh,
something.
Oh, you're going to take them on.
Well, I think
we
just got to
do something
really coffee
and just open one right next door to a Starbucks?
Yeah.
Have you done that?
Well, no, we haven't yet. But I think it'd be a good case study, right? And I think that the Starbucks is still doing really well, because people have been consuming it like every day for 30 years.
Used to it.
But I think it would be good to sort of contrast the experiences, and who knows, maybe we'd actually get a lot of their staff moving across to work for us. But I think Starbucks, that's the thing. I am so respectful of what they've done. They're the best hospitality company in history. And Schultz, I think, is the best leader. I'm in absolute admiration for what they've achieved. And they're just taking a different path. They've got 27,000 stores. It's pretty hard to be boutique.
27,000.
They've opened three a day since Schultz bought the company in 87. Yeah, and they're about to open more than 10,000 in China. So,
Schultz,
for them.
He owns all of them. I thought it's not a stock listed
company. No, it's a listed company, $100 billion valuation.
So. Whoa, man, that's crazy. So you have a few celebrities come through your coffee houses?
Yeah,
You got any Insta-famous people or celebrity actors who come by that swear by your coffee, give you plugs?
Yeah, well, you know, Hugh Jackman and Margot Robbie was in our LA store a couple of weeks ago. I was pretty excited. I wish I was in LA for that one.
Isn't she incredible? What that girl has done. And you know, being a producer of her own, executive producer of her own, you know, film company, making movies at her age.
Yep.
Wow.
Yeah, like Margot. She's
such a cool down-to-earth chick as well. When I was working on Big Brother all those years ago, she was on Neighbours. And I'd hang out with her at a lot of, you know, Channel 10 launches. And such a nice down-to-earth girl.
Yeah, incredible. And then to make it the way that she did, you know, taking that role in Wolf of Wall Street and, you know, Scorsese, you know, it was a big, big role. And, gee, she pulled it off, and then just strength to strength. And obviously, Itonio is the producer. So, no, she'd be great as an ambassador for the company.
Margot, if you're watching.
Yeah. No, I've sort of told the team I want to meet Margot.
Do you have
ambassadors? I wanted to make the face of Bluestone.
Who's a Bluestone ambassador?
Oh, listen, I think we've got a few in New York. Like,
I'm going to eat this avocado smash.
James Franco's in frequently. Malcolm Gladwell's in most days, the author. Big fan of his books.
James Franco, wow.
Yeah,
cool.
He hangs out a lot. But yeah, cool. You know, if I guess if you to be that's the fortunate thing. Like if you're based in New York and you're based in LA and your proposition's pretty good, there's a good chance that you're probably gonna get a few famous folk in there. We've had, you know, everyone from the big Instagram stars, whether it's Gigi Hadid and you know, Kendall Jenner, through to sportsmen. So, you know, Patty Mills is a big fan. I've seen him a few times.
Is Patty Mills? What a legend.
Yeah, I love Patty Mills. He's gone in multiple times with Bluestone Lane Cup. You know, when they do the, when they're all dressed up going, you know, through
press
the
conference.
Tunnel. Yeah, he's had the Bluestone Lane Cup.
Oh, wow.
I couldn't believe it.
He's plugging the Australian Cup in. He knows this Australian.
Yeah, and it was on the Spurs Instagram once.
Oh, my God.
Nearly fell over. I think Shura actually.
You better open a coffee house down there.
Yeah, we're looking. We're looking at San Antonio. I think that'd be pretty cool. So,
and so you follow basketball?
Somewhat. I follow Australians who are making. So I was a big fan of Joe Ingles in the playoffs. But no, I don't know basketball particularly well. I sort of follow American football a bit more.
What about Andrew Bogut?
Yeah, Bogut. Bogut's had a great career. Yeah.
These DSLRs, they film for 30 minutes and then the battery's dead, but that's all right. These are still going.
Okay.
Yeah, sorry. As you're saying.
Yeah, Bogut. Bogut's great, but listen, everyone's talking about the Simmons, right?
Ben Simmons, like some of the commentators, I hear them talking about him as the next Michael Jordan.
Yeah, I think, well, even LeBron. Wow. I think LeBron said that he's going to be the next LeBron. So,
would you put LeBron on par with Michael Jordan?
I think so. I think he's pretty amazing that good. The problem is LeBron hasn't won enough championships. Mm. That's the challenge, right? If he'd won the last two, I think it'd be sort of on that level. But that's what everyone's going to refer to.
It's amazing to see
championship rings.
People like LeBron and, you know, Michael Jordan, the whole team that's playing around them really lift their game. But I don't feel like in the last finals that LeBron and his team lifted.
LeBron still played pretty well, but no one else like stood up to the level they needed. Yeah, but and like that was the thing. Like Durant obviously just had a phenomenal playoff, and then the final, what was it, game four that they won? Steph Curry, you know, had 35, and the game before he really played a supporting role for Durant, and then. You know, Steph, and I remember how many three for he shot. He missed like 10 threes in the game prior, and then he comes. This is what I can't believe about basketball is that you think about like AFL when like people have got the yips.
Yeah,
they miss goals, and then the next week they pretty much have sort of the remnants of the yips again.
Yeah.
In basketball,
it can change.
Steph Curry could miss 10 threes in a row and then hit 10 threes in a row. Like it's just. The mentality American athletes is a little bit different.
It's a juju. It's like an energy. And you see them when they come out onto the court and they're all high-fiving and doing their handshakes and getting along really well. It's a confidence thing.
It's outrageous.
It's the crowd getting behind you. It's feeling good and knowing you can nail it. But if one little off thing, maybe your wife is bagging you at home in the morning and you're thinking about it just as you try to shoot the three-pointer, you'll miss.
Yeah. But then, you know, they'll block it out. The next day, they'll do it. And that was an interesting thing about AFL, actually. The guys that I typically found the best players could just have this innate confidence, no matter what was going on, that they could turn it around and make it happen. And I think that's the difference between someone who's, you know, not a bad player versus like a champion.
You still mates with any of the players? They come over and visit you at your Bluestone Lane?
Yeah, there's a few, definitely. Matt McGuire is one of my best friends. I played with him at St Kilda, and he's come across and stayed with me. And then, you know, some guys I played with, like Matt Ball, I played with at Hawthorn, but I also played with at sort of Prahran Dragons and against him when he was at Xavier. There's a few of those guys that I'm still really good friends with. And Matt's actually, Matt Ball's a pretty big investor in Bluestone, so hopefully we don't let him down.
So you got a few investors?
Yeah. We've got a lot of family and friends in there, and a couple of institutional guys. So, we're looking to grow pretty aggressively over the next year.
When are you coming to Australia?
Oh, you wouldn't take a beer to the pub, would you? Right? It's too hard. We couldn't. We're not
too much competition.
I think it is, and I'd be very worried that a few Aussies out there might be trying to sort of knock us down a little bit.
Well, you're hiring them to work in your cafe.
Yeah, but they, I think there's a lot of attraction to work in the US.
Yeah, totally.
So, Yeah, I think for us, like the US is the focus, and then I'd imagine we'd have a good look at Asia and Canada, the UK.
Yeah,
but yeah.
What would you say to people out there that are watching, just to finish up? Because I know you're busy and you got the new restaurants opening, and you got to get away. But what would you say to young businessmen, young entrepreneurs out there that are looking to start a business, not a coffee shop, a business in America, in LA, coming over here to crack the big time? Because I mean, from an actor's TV host perspective, I lived here in LA on and off. For a couple of years, and it's tough, and I find LA is like a massive leveler for anyone that's coming from Australia. You might have had some success. They don't care. You're starting from scratch here. Mm-hmm. What would you say to people out there that are coming here for the first time and going to have a crack at it? Like they just got their O1 or got a green card in the lottery.
I think you need to be prepared and you need to be researched. I do believe that coming across and chancing your arm in New York and LA is very challenging because it's hard to differentiate yourself. Mm. I think you need to have a bit of a plan. And if you're going to start a business, you really, really need to have spent the time and objectively viewed your value proposition. Like, why will someone buy your product or service? Why will they join your team? And I think you've got to be really raw and honest and brutal about that. And if you're not kidding yourself, and you're doing the research, which builds more confidence, I think you can. I think the US is an incredibly entrepreneurial environment, and they get behind things like nothing else. They look for the positives, not the challenges.
Do you think Australia look a bit for the negative a bit more? The tall poppy thing.
I think that there's a reason why the venture capital industry doesn't really work in Australia. I think people are a bit more closed and conservative, where in the US, that, you know, they'll give anything a crack, right? And they also have like weight of numbers. So for something to work in the US, you might only need 1% of the population. And, you know, you're talking about 32 million people. So,
a lot of people. What do we got in Australia?
3.2 million
we got
people.
Like, what do we got, 26 million in Australia or something like that?
25 million and versus 330. So, yeah, 1%, 3.3 million. That's pretty exciting.
It's a bigger market.
That's the population of Melbourne, right? So.
Exactly. Yeah. Do you miss Melbourne? You miss home?
Yeah. I miss my family and friends and the environment. Australia's the best country in the world. But for professional opportunities, the US is great. But in saying that, like, I love our lifestyle. I love living in New York for 8 years. I love the lifestyle we have now in LA. And it's now we're one flight home and the time zone's a lot better. And working in Bluestone with this team has been absolutely fantastic. And I love being part of the crew and trying to make a difference to our locals' day every day.
Nice. Yeah. One last thing I just remembered I didn't ask you about. Yep. I see a lot of the time out there they have ethical coffee.
Yeah.
What is the difference? And do you guys have ethical coffee or whatever that means?
Yeah, there's different standards for where coffee is sourced. And we only serve Rainforest Alliance accredited coffee, which is the highest level of global accreditation. So it really talks about ensuring that when coffee's grown and sourced, it's done in a sustainable way. And you know, I think it's vitally important for the environment, and it's also vitally important for the entire value chain that the farmers are rewarded appropriately, and there's no sort of distortion that impacts the economics and viability. So RFA is the big one, a little frog. You'll see that
symbol. Yeah, I've seen that. Yeah, what does that mean?
Yeah, so it means this Rainforest Alliance accredited. So you need to demonstrate to them where it's sourced from and who you're working with. Mm. So that's the global standard. And that's what we've looked for, and everything we serve is RFA. I think there's continued areas. Like, one of the big opportunities, without a doubt, is blockchain. So the full transparency on where a bean comes from and how it's sourced.
The coffee bean blockchain.
Yeah, I think the transparency that blockchain can bring will be phenomenal.
Yeah. Right. So you've been into crypto?
I'm very much crypto. I don't know that much about, but blockchain I've read a lot about, and I do think that it could work in
the peer-to-peer technology, and just between the coffee manufacturer and the coffee house,
and just full radical transparency on everything, and you know, integrity behind the data and the inability to
distort
it.
So where would that blockchain technology be used in a way to pay the copy producers?
Yeah, yeah.
Or is it like a ticketing system to prove that it came from someone?
Just absolute transparency to know where it came from, how it was sourced, which intermediaries it went by, how did it travel, how long it's been sitting in a warehouse.
Yeah.
I think all that sort of stuff is gonna mean that you've just got greater visibility. And I can see it working in a whole host of industries, but coffee's one where it comes from a farm, right? Coffee's a very human, capital-intensive industry.
Yeah.
They've got farmers who pick the cherries and then, you know, it's washed and dried and sorted and all that sort of stuff, and then it comes through as a green bean and then gets roasted in a facility in Dumbo, Brooklyn, New York City. So I think I'm really excited about the advances in blockchain. And,
wicked.
And, you know, everything we do at Bluestone, because I didn't have any background in hospitality, I've applied a sort of corporate lens to it and looked at best practices across a whole different industry, whole different number of industries. So everything we do is like tech forward. We're paperless, we're cashless, everything's in the cloud.
Mm.
We can monitor all our performance of all our stores or anything really digitally.
Mm.
So it just makes it a lot easier to run a business. And that's also another tip for people starting out, like try and make it easy for yourself by leveraging technology to help you.
Mm.
And it enables you to make decisions faster and work out where you should be spending your time and investing. Mm. So
speaking of making decisions faster, that's the cops I can hear in the background. So I'm going to go. Thank you very much for watching On The Mic.
Thanks, Mike.
Nicholas.
Thanks, mate.
If you're in LA, or many other places across America, make sure you go to Bluestone Lane, best coffee in the USA, maybe even the best in the world. I'm sure some people in Melbourne would disagree, but this guy's a legend. He's doing great things, and I wish you all the best, mate. Thanks so much for being on the show.
Appreciate it.
Nicholas Stone. Cool, man.
Okay.